Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. An unusual hour for us because we're inviting you to be the people who have the great minds who can help us move forward in this country. I think it's an understatement to say that we've been jolted the past weeks by terrible acts of violence. On Sunday in Baton Rouge, three law enforcement officers were fatally shot, three others wounded. On July 7, five officers were killed in Dallas. This was carried out by a black man who said he wanted to kill white police officers. On top of all of that, we've had the African-American young man who was killed near Minneapolis and another in Baton Rouge, and we had the terror attack in Nice, and we had the attack in Orlando, and it's just too much, isn't it? It's just too much. If you're aware of the news, if you follow it, it's just, you wonder, how do we get to a new reality? And so I guess that's the question of this hour. The president addressing the nation after the killings in Dallas said that they were an attack on all of us. We have our divisions. They are not new. We'll hear more of what he said in a moment. The president of the Cleveland Police Patrolmen's Association has urged people not to bring their guns anywhere near Cleveland's downtown during the Republican National Convention because officers, understandably, are in a heightened state. And in Cleveland, I guess on Sunday, there was a gentleman who stood in the public square holding a semi-automatic AR-15-style assault weapon that was allowed under the open carry law. But obviously it made people nervous, and it made the police nervous as well. So now we're starting to draw lines. The blue lives matter, all lives matter, black lives matter. We have these different slogans. We're sort of taking sides on this. We're on the police side, or we're on the Black Lives Matter. But obviously there are all kinds of people who are concerned about the amount of violence, and they're looking at race in the country, police race, community relations, particularly in the black community. We're looking at the kinds of guns that we have in this country. We're looking at how our politics are very partisan and dividing us. And we're just having a hard time with all of it. So I guess that what will happen this hour is that we're asking you the best way forward at this point. The New York Times had some interesting letters, and let me, just as a way of getting this all started, read a couple and maybe you can respond to these. What do you think we need to do here? Do we need another big national dialogue on how Republicans and Democrats can get along, on how people who support gun ownership, those who support gun safety, those who support gun regulation can have dialogues with each other, how the police and particularly the African-American community can trust one another. Things are not in a good place. A couple of letters to the editor recently, actually, they were published today. Attack on officers jolts a nation. This was in regards to a front page Times story on July 18th. The murders of police officers in Baton Rouge and Dallas are beyond tragic. They also put the lie to one of the main rationales behind opposition to gun control. The best way to stop bad guys with guns is good guys with guns, because the murdered police officers all had guns and were still defenseless victims. I wish away our 24-hour news coverage, social media, the internet, or our cell phone cameras. But together, they have created an atmosphere in which an irrational actor can more easily achieve his dreams. And I think the 24-hour coverage makes us all a nervous wreck, to tell you the truth, at times. So what do we do about all of this? Obviously, you don't want to live with all of this violence around. It's just not good, with division. So what do we do? We ask you to answer that question. You're smart people. Clarence Page said that. A lot of guests say that frequently on this show. So give us your deepest thoughts. Our phone number, you don't often get this chance, so take advantage. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join this soul-searching conversation about our country. Here's what the president had to say, part of what he said after the shooting of and killing of the police officers in Dallas.
Faced with this violence, we wonder if the divides of race in America can ever be bridged. We wonder if an African-American community that feels unfairly targeted by police and police departments that feel unfairly maligned for doing their jobs can never understand each other's experience. We turn on the TV or surf the internet and we can watch positions harden and lines drawn and people retreat to their respective corners. And politicians calculate how to grab attention or avoid the fallout. We see all this, and it's hard not to think sometimes that the center won't hold and that things might get worse. I understand. I understand how Americans are feeling. But Dallas, I'm here to say we must reject such despair. I'm here to insist that we are not as divided as we seem. And I know that because I know America. I know how far we've come against impossible odds.
Healing Our Divisions, 800-486-8655 is our number, and let's just hear from you this hour. We go to Bob in Madison first. Hello, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm completely perplexed at some of the things that I'm hearing, and then I see the realities of what's going on in the day-to-day of the people that I run into, and you're right, the 24-hour news cycle is driving us all crazy, and I do social media for a living, so I'm twice as nuts.
Uh-huh.
But one thing I've been noticing is that we're getting more and more desperate. I'm pushing 60 years old, so I've seen when there was a bigger chunk of pie for the middle class, and that meant there was even a bigger chunk of pie for people that are less than the middle class. And now we have such a division financially that there's only so much resources to go around, and everybody's trying to divide us by a name or a territory or any kind of divisionary mechanism possible, and it puts us against each other, and then those who are together, which are very few, have the advantage of the upper hand just because they're logistically more able to communicate. And that's what I'm afraid. It's just that simple, and we're just seeing it blow apart all over the place in real time. But the fact of it is we're still in a pretty safe place, all of us. I'm going down the interstate at 70 miles an hour talking on a Bluetooth. I have a feeling I'll probably live just as long as any terrorist will kill me or somebody with a gun, or I don't carry a gun, I don't own one. But I think our fear is our biggest enemy. And that's really kind of the short and tall of it.
Thank you, Bob, for your call. Thank you. We're just listening to you this hour on all of these issues. And I think that there is something to our, and certainly true for those of us in this business, we just get bombarded with all of this horrendous news. But we all do, because it's all a part of our consciousness. And terrible things have been happening, and people are at each other and don't like the opinions of other people. And it's just leading us down this really divided path, I think, and a fearful path as well, which, as Bob says, is probably not a good way to live. Let's go to Kevin in Baraboo next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. I'm out of my studio working on some artwork, and I was just mentioning to KP that I've got another piece of artwork that kind of deals with an issue, and so therefore this piece of artwork, I just completed it a week or so ago, but it basically just says, too many guns kill too many people. Now, I don't really own a gun for hunting or anything like that. However, I do know people that are hunters, and they're very responsible. They're patrons of mine. I really don't want to get them angry. But, you know, AK-47s and the like and things like that, there's just there needs to be a real rational discussion. And, you know, if the NRA wants to be involved, fine. But, you know, they have to be reasonable. And, you know, I think that they're kind of dealing with things in an unreasonable way, and it needs to be talked about, and there needs to be things that are happening, because we're a far too violent country to survive.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the answer? We will get these people. We're going to this hour, except they weren't available, so we thought, why not talk to the audience about this? We're going to talk with some people from the University of Florida who are looking at most Americans believe, and it's a huge number of Americans believe, that we should have background checks for guns. I don't know if that would make us safer or not. Something like 93% of Americans believe that, but nothing happens. Would you feel safer if there were fewer guns? Can you explain why it is that if 93% of the American people believe that, nothing happens in that realm?
Well, yeah, politicians like to talk about the fact that concealed carry can actually help people, but what was the situation up in St. Paul that the guy that was shot by a policeman, you know, had a legal gun, and he was telling the officer, and the officer kind of freaked out and ended up killing him. So, you know, obviously there's people that are dying because there's too many guns, and so therefore, you know, concealed carry, I think, is a bad thing. Open carry, I think, is a bad thing. Police are getting nervous about too many people having guns, and I don't really know. Again, I'm not a gun owner, but I'm concerned about this country and this state, and things, you know, things have to be reasonably worked out. Otherwise, we're just going to keep on killing too many people. Too many innocent people are going to die. And it should not be, you know, policemen dying because people are picking them off either. It's an issue that needs to be resolved in both directions. And so, you know, I create artwork that kind of deals with things, and I create artwork that deals with election and immigration and so on and so forth. And I can, you know, send you a picture of the piece of artwork that I sent. I think I sent you something last year.
Yes, you did. Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the. If I could talk to KP after I'm finished talking to you, I'll figure out a way to send you a picture of what I just created, and you can take a look at it and post it if you want to.
Thanks, Kevin. We'll put you on hold, and KP will get back on the phone with you about all of this. Let's go next to. Who's next? Josh in Sparta. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
It's my understanding there's over 200 people shot in Chicago so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
And not one of these guns were purchased legally. Where are they getting them? I think we're really losing something here. It's really the violence. There's been no protests about these shootings. One person gets shot somewhere, and there's protests and supporters everywhere. But we've got kids on drugs, involved in crime, shooting each other nonstop. And I don't see the president or anybody else talking about it.
Yeah. Well, the president has talked about that. He talks about the South Side of Chicago frequently. But you're right. It's more violence in this country. It's horrendous what's going on in Chicago and what's going on in major cities, where crime has been down in many parts of the country, but in many of our major cities, it isn't. And we don't have an answer for that. And I think it's a multi-layered kind of problem. But it's horrendous that all these young people are dying in Chicago or wherever they happen to be. It's terrible. So thank you, Josh, very much for your call. Steve is next in Arkansas, Wisconsin. Hi, Steve.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. It's my opinion that, you know, justice and the rule of law must be honored by one and all. I mean, Hillary or whoever the case may be. If you violate the law, I tell my 14-year-old son that's going to grow up to be a police officer. He's determined to be a police officer. I said, when you take that oath in office, you better uphold the law. If your fellow officers violate the law, you arrest them there and then on the spot. The problem is, these people, even the police officers, they're killing people and assaulting, using excessive force. I'm not generalizing. There's a lot of good of them, but there's the bad apples. They're not being prosecuted. They got a code blue where they don't prosecute their own. The district attorneys don't prosecute them. And what's happening is these people throughout the country are saying, hey, there's a two-tier system. There's those that get violated, that get prosecuted by the law, and there's those that do not get prosecuted by the law. So people, I guess, are taking justice into their own hands, taking the law into their own hands, because the district attorneys and the police officers ain't going after their own. I mean, you can see video after video of women and men being assaulted for using an excessive force by police officers throughout the country. And a lot of them go uncharged. I mean, the majority of police officers are good, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But there's those that are bad. And as far as gun control is, if the Democrats try to use gun control, there's a lot happening. It'll split this country right down to the foundation. I mean, it shake this country right to the core of its being, because half will not give up their constitutional rights to bear arms. Another half want them to, and there'll be a conflict. I mean, it says right in the Constitution, you have a right to bear arms against any government that tries to take your constitutional rights away to bear arms, including your very own. So the gun control ain't the ticket. These African Americans are feeling that justice is not served to them, because time and time again, these police officers, New York, whatever the case may be, are getting off with murdering African Americans.
All right. Thank you very much for your opinion and your thoughts on all of this. And obviously, race relations between police communities and African Americans is an issue that we still need to carry forward, right? Thanks, Steve, for your call. Let's go next to Elaine in River Falls. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. Just wanted to say that I think that the police officers should be prosecuted as anybody else in a fair trial. I think that they haven't been, and that the killing in Minneapolis is probably one example of a police officer that should be prosecuted kindly. Although I'm not against cops or anything, but I think that, you know, there have been so many black people that have been killed that the police officers have not been prosecuted as yet and all. And I think this is a concern.
I think that it is part of the picture here, and the response obviously can't be to kill police officers. What a mess that puts us in, doesn't it?
Yes, I don't think we should do that either.
No, it's horrible.
No, I don't think that's the answer, but I do think that they should be prosecuted as anybody else would be in a trial. And we haven't done that. We have gotten them off every time, so... That's just my thought. Thank you.
Thanks, Elaine, very much for your call. Larry is next in Michigan. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Larry.
I just like to point out that if you go online and you look at when the Japanese entered the Philippines, it was a nation and a mentality. And they went in there and they killed hundreds of thousands of people and maimed people. And then you bring it into today's society, and we're clear down to the individual who has this attitude because of this me-first ideal. And I think that everybody's trying to find blame, but we're a me-first society, so this is what you get.
So what do we need to have? Put it in a bigger context.
Excuse me?
What do we need? Instead of, we need where we're looking out for each other, where there's more of a sense of community? Is that what you're saying?
Well... Okay, let's take it one step farther. We'll take the LGBT. Okay, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But why would you run a baker out of business? Why would you not give the baker the same freedom that you expect?
Because we have to protect people in this country. We can't discriminate.
Okay, we can't discriminate. But why would you not give them the same respect that you are asking for by finding like-minded people? It's because of individuality. It's a me-first society.
Well, you could say that about African Americans. You could say it about all kinds of groups that have tried to find their place in American society, and we have to protect minorities in the country. I think that's part of what America is. Let's go next. We're talking about this problem, significant problem it would appear to be, because there's been so many shootings in this country of race, that we still need a national conversation about race. We're looking at police-community relations. We're looking at the killings, horrendous killings of police officers, to the point where the Cleveland police asked for open carry to be lifted during the Republican convention, which couldn't happen, but they're worried about potential violence because of the number of guns and high-power rifles. Does that need to be a part of our conversation? And then we have the political dialogue as well, which is pretty nasty, which would only be heightened during this particular convention time of year. But I guess we're asking for some deep thought about, and your answers. What is it we do to make all of us feel better, safer, more hopeful. This is, our number is 800-486-8655, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number, and let's go to Lynn in Barnum, Minnesota. Hi, Lynn.
I just want to make two quick points, one about gun control. My boyfriend comes from a big family that loves guns, and I'd hate to see rights like that be taken away, and same with people that feel like they need one to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, I guns, and I'm scared of them.
I'm sorry, Lynn, can you call us back? Your phone, we're just missing every other word, so I want to hear what you're saying, but I can't. So please, please call us again so we can hear you. And let's go to Setonia in Keewaskum. Hi, Setonia.
Hi.
Hi.
All right, I am a little bit nervous to be on air, but so in regards to this topic, I think one of the first things we need to do is stop pretending that this is a new thing. This, I think I've heard a quote somewhere that said the only thing that is new about this situation are the phones. We're now able to capture these things happening in live time and distribute it everywhere. And so this tension between the Black community and police officers has been going on for as long as there's been the Black community and law enforcement. I think we need to stop pretending that the history between these two groups are not affecting them today. And what I mean by that is if you go back into history from civil rights movements to how the police officers were brutalizing this group then to before then when those groups were brutalized or they allowed citizens to brutalize that group. And all of that is spilled over to today because after the civil rights movement, we kind of just swept some things. We felt good enough. We got these laws passed. We swept things under the rug, and we've been living with all of this under the rug for so long, and now it is boiling over. Now, all that said, that doesn't mean that we need to be going around killing police officers. That obviously isn't the answer. I think the answer between that is police reform and community reform.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe gun control, within reason, of course, like assault rifles shouldn't be a thing, but gun control I don't think is the answer. I think there needs to be a stiffer process of choosing who's a police officer. If you can't handle a man sitting in his car telling you that he has a gun, a registered gun, and you get nervous enough to shoot him, you are not fit to be a police officer. There needs to be psychological evaluation for police officers. And in these communities that still have leftover bad feelings for law enforcement, there needs to be community reform. There needs to be, there's this guy, Officer Tommy something, I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
And he does community policing, and he goes into the community. He knows the people. So when he goes in there and there's a domestic, there's fights or something like that, he knows these people. He can tell them by name.
Right.
And I think that is what America needs between these communities and the police officers. We don't just need people who, you know, from their point of view, are just coming in and, you know, they don't know you. They just
right.
know what
we
they hear
to.
About these areas of people, and they're putting out this prejudice.
All right. Thanks, Setonia, very much for your call. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, that we do need to know the communities. Obviously, there has been a lot of tension in the African-American community, well justified in some search, so many Black drivers being pulled over, and in some communities like Ferguson being pulled over and help paying the cost of the city because the fines contributed to that fund in the city. But there is much to be done in this. I thought that the police chief in Dallas, too, had an interesting address when he talked about all it is that police officers have to do. And it's an honorable job, and there are many, many honorable people serving in that capacity, but they have to deal with with so much that maybe we've forsaken mental health. Mental health, a huge issue in our country, and the police have to handle that and need extra funds for handling mental health cases. They're dealing with drug abuse. They're dealing with domestic violence. They're dealing, you know, if there's a problem in society, give it to the police. And you have to ask if that's fair either. Thanks very much for your call. Claire in Madison is next. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi. I totally agree with what you just said, and I said back when Trump looked like he actually might be the Republican candidate, I made a joke to somebody that, you know, we have a Surgeon General in the United States. Maybe we should have a Psychiatrist General, too. Hmm. And that's kind of half funny, half not.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my thinking, Kathleen. I'd like to take the big picture, not just the gun violence, everything. I think Donald Trump, I studied psychology in college, and I think Donald Trump is mentally ill, and I think he is ginning up, for lack of a better phrase, a lot of fear and hate in this country that, yes, it existed, but now it's even more open and far, far worse than I remembered in my lifetime. But here's the thing, Kathleen. I think our nation is sick, just like people get sick, and the symptoms are fear, hate, hate of women, hate of blacks, hate of Muslims, hate of Hispanics, you name it. It all stems, I think, a lot of it anyway, from income inequality. Rich people are getting so incredibly rich, and the rest of us are just barely eking by, or a lot of us. And the future is very, very frightening for someone like me who's on disability. That and the money in politics, because politicians, it's obvious, the Republicans don't want Donald Trump as their candidate, but it's obvious they're kind of stuck with him now, and they'll just go along with it because they have to. We've got to get this money out of politics, and maybe things can start to change for the better.
Thanks, Claire, very much. And Claire is the second person who's brought up income inequality as being part of this big picture that we're looking at this hour. Would you agree that it's a part of it? We go next to Nikki in Minnesota. Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm calling in and speaking, you know, as an African-American who has had the privilege to be around all types. And I would like for any white person to be able to tell me they went through what an African-American has went through for generation after generation, from slavery to segregation to now, and I miss some in between. No white person had experienced the treatment that we have had to persevere. And until people, all people, take accountability of it and is really willing to come to the table and admit it to heal, the country will continue to go on a downfall. People continuously to put it to the side, bring up things like why black people kill black people and things like that, to avoid facing the fact that it is segregated. African Americans are profiled. They are mistreated. They are being shot down and killed unfairly. Police take a vow to protect us as people, not as white people, not as just one race, as a people. We should not be shot, harassed, and things like that because we say stuff that they don't like. It's just not right, and it is a generation thing. It is not the beginning. It is definitely not the beginning, and it's really upsetting for a discussion to go on constantly year after year as if it does not exist when it's clear, loud as day. You often say why black people kill each other. In Chicago, they shoot and kill each other, and there's no protest. It is. Tune in. It has been protest. It has been gathering. White people kill each other, too. The white kids go into the colleges and shoot them up. They kill their parents. They overdose. They take drugs. They sell drugs. You don't see it on the news like you do for African Americans because the world was set like that. This is generational. And until we stand as people, because we're making...
And we just lost you, Nikki, but we...
want to see making children. So until we come together and admit it and correct it, it will continue to go on and down.
Yeah, thank you very much for your call. And we do need to remember our history, and I'm appalled when I read that we're not. People just have huge swaths of important American history that they know very little about, which is highly unfortunate. Nikki, thank you very much for your call and your perspective. And let's go next to Elaine in Cumberland. Hi, Elaine.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because I see this whole situation as a number of long-term problems. And, you know, we don't talk people down anymore. They shoot people. Since 2001, we've had an uptick in violence since 9/11. And I'm not blaming it on 9/11. I'm just saying we have this uptick. And we have a history of wars. And we have more and more guns all the time. And if you arm our police right now have military weapons on the street in SWAT teams and stuff from the war we were in. And this sets off this battle between the guns with the citizens and the guns with the police. But the police have an extra heavy load because they don't just have to make traffic stops. They have to deal with mental health,
sure,
sort of like care medics. Mm-hmm. And we need to have a mental health care policy, national policy, where we have psychologists and psychiatrists monitoring these people that have these kind of offenses. But we don't. Since the 80s, we've just decimated the mental health care industry. It can't be just massive corporations putting people on medications. There has to be some kind of a, like this earlier caller said, a psychologist, psychiatrist, that can help us change our attitudes about gun violence and killing people. And I guess basically I've seen violence with police against women. And personally, and I think it has to do with overstress, but also this power trip that people get on. So I would like to see somebody, this is just one idea out of several that would help. But the biggest thing is, if the last two big shooters were both ex-military people.
Right.
So we need to really look at what we're doing, how we're training these people, and who we're putting on the street.
All right. Thank you very much. And we mentioned the letters to the editor in the New York Times. One of the letters did mention the fact that both shooters of police officers in Dallas and Baton Rouge had been soldiers. This person who penned this letter said we need to address the fact that these men may have been damaged by their war experience. Post-traumatic stress syndrome left untreated leaves broken men to do desperate and sometimes despicable acts. So one area brings us into another, right? Into another. It's very large. Thanks very much for your call. And let us go next to Mike in Greenbush. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Long-time caller, and I've never gotten any background information, but I'm retired law enforcement. I also had a family member who was assassinated in the line of duty, so I understand both angles. Also a behavioral scientist. And in my experience, when I was a law enforcement officer, 25%, maybe more, of the officers I worked with should not have been carrying firearms.
Hmm.
Now I would suspect 50 to 75%. I have not met a law enforcement professional who has people skills. They have military background. They have, I call them Rambo cops. And the problem is they don't have an idea of what a peace officer, P-E-A-C-E. My great-grandfather was shot keeping the peace as the town constable in Calumet County. And law officers today are not peace officers. They have very few people skills. And it boils down to basically the bar has been lowered for who gets into law enforcement. Lakeshore Technical College can't get enough students to apply, so they've lowered the academic standards. So it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think the answer is basically you screen out the bad apples because everybody wants to support the good cops. And absolutely, the good cops are the ones who take the hit for the ones who are doing all the damage. And until you screen out the bad apples and you give the good cops the support, psychological, emotional, financial support that they deserve and they need, we're going to continue to go down and down and down and down.
Now, Mike, though, the numbers you've given are pretty high. Where do you get the statistics that support the statement that 50% of officers are bad apples?
Personal experience. I have met hundreds of police officers, and I can't tell you. I can tell you on one hand how many of them I respect because they have the knowledge to be a good police officer. A lot of people go into law enforcement who have been bullied all their life, and they go into law enforcement because they have a chip on their shoulder or they're gun wackos. And I say this because I grew up with firearms. I respect firearms. I don't worship them. A lot of cops right now are gun worshipers, and that's dangerous. You need to get rid of the short man syndrome cops who have a chip on their shoulder, who take law enforcement personally and become bullies. And that's not happening in this country. In fact, we're training the wrong people for law enforcement, and we should be training people who have a minimum of a bachelor's degree, because associate degree law enforcement with deadly force are dangerous, and that's what's happening. Not only are they dangerous to the minorities and the blacks, but they're shooting white guys in Nina. I mean, it's a contagious cancer, and the way to do it is to screen out the cops who basically have issues and hire good ones and keep them well paid and support them. And that's why we've got to support law enforcement professionals. Right. Law enforcement deserve the support. The bad apples have to go and be, you know, hauling garbage or being a postman or whatever, but no deadly firearms should be handed to anybody who's got psychological
right.
issues.
So let's look at the other issue that's going on here. By all accounts, many of the officers who were killed in Dallas and in Baton Rouge were long-serving members of their respective departments. How do we keep police officers from being shot?
Well, it's the rage that's been happening for decades. I mean, you can't just turn this around. It's the, you know, the respect for law enforcement is at an all-time low, and it's because of the rogue cops. The Rambo cops are destroying the trust that all people should have for law enforcement, and the good ones are basically they're quitting. They can't handle the kind of, you know, if anybody's ever worked in a union, you understand that a union supports the guys who and the women who basically just don't perform. If you perform and you're well respected, you can start bringing trust back. And I've met one Sheboygan County Sheriff deputy in 25 years who I respect, and I mean, it's gotten to the point where he's the only one I've met in 10 years that gets it, and he's retired. He should be training all the new ones coming in, and he's not. But
all right, I need to hold you there, Mike. Thanks very much for your comments. I'm sure we'll have people respond to what you've had to say. This hour, we're hearing your thoughts. We're appearing to be in a very troubled state. We've been jolted by shootings of police officers, shootings of African-American young men. We've had a terror attack and keep having them abroad and attack in Orlando, and the question is, and now we've got politics. Is politics fueling the divisions that we have and the anger that we have about these issues? We're just opening phone lines for you this hour. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go next to Mike in Wausau. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that, like, throughout your show, there's been many different solutions brought up and ideas, but and also in any other talks I've heard, the one thing I don't hear is public education. If you look at when the Orlando shooting happened, I checked out there's a site about Chicago gun violence Chicago gun violence, and in the week or two before that, there was almost 1,600 victims of gun violence in the Chicago area. And, you know, not to take away from the tragedy that happened there, but these are people whose children have firearms and weapons. You know, how do they recognize, what can I do about my kid with a gun? Or, I don't know, there's that side of this. And then there's the other side is these mass shootings. Shouldn't we be educating the public on answering the question of my coworker is making all these violent jokes? How do I know when to take them serious? And when I do, what do I do? Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing. I'm not hearing any of this brought up. And ultimately, the responsibility to fix this is on the citizens.
All right. Thanks, Mike, so much for your thoughts. Lynn is back with us from Burnham. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I'm glad you took my call again. I'm calling a couple of reasons. One is gun control. I have a family I'm into with that believe in their gun rights and that. In fact, I have two son-in-laws that have the license to carry and conceal in Minnesota. And I'm not saying what happened down in St. Paul was right. But one of the laws is, and that's one of the things they had to sign, they had to understand the laws. You do not carry the gun on your body and clip in a vehicle, all right? Second one, I believe in that people don't respect each other anymore these days. Anybody above 50 and on was taught respect. You respect no matter who it was, if it was a police officer, if it was a police officer pulling over a person in the car, you respected that person. You know, customer service, no respect. It's just nobody's been taught respect or to take responsibility for their actions anymore. And I think that falls on society and parents. You know, that they don't teach their kids this anymore. They don't make them understand that, you know, just because you're different than this one, that doesn't mean you don't deserve, they don't deserve respect, no matter what. Even if you don't like that person, you still need to respect them because you're going to have to deal with them out in the public.
All right, Lynn, thanks very much for calling back and for your thoughts on this. Let's go to Chris in Wausau. Hi, Chris.
How you doing?
All right. How are you?
The one thing I want to say, I got a couple of points, but the first point is that we really don't talk about the fact that we ask police to police poverty instead of taking a stance against poverty the way we do cancer, the way we do any other major disease, because I find that it is a disease. I was born in Chicago. I've seen up close, 715-559-564. I've seen up close the heartache that comes from growing up around abandoned buildings. And growing up in an environment where the one time you see a white person is as a mailman or as the police officer. And we have this real invisible wall that we don't want to admit that there is a separation between white people and black people based on the communities you were raised in. And we don't really pay any attention to what kind of movement we need to be putting together to get these, to get our fellow man out of poverty, because it seems like sometimes there's a black America and they want us to fix our own problems, and then there's a white America where all people come together.
Chris, we lost the connection, but you made your point movingly. Thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Elaine in Colfax. Hi, Elaine. Hello?
Me?
Yeah, hi, Lane.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I used to work with quadriplegics, paraplegics, and people that had major injuries. And Freddie Gray, for instance, in Baltimore, he could not possibly have that injury from just not being belted in. That was a rough ride. And the police officers got off, most of them, and that have been charged. We have got to stop allowing these people to get off, or this will never stop. And I believe that we have to have a kind of a truth and reconciliation. That I agreed with the officer, Mike, who was talking about the education level of the officers, that maybe people should be coming from the, like, social services, therapists become officers, people that have training in all kinds of society's ills, ways to deal with people in a positive way. But I ultimately, it's an education starting in the schools about prejudice. This should be in elementary schools. It should be something that is seriously taken. And I'm horrified, to be honest. My stomach's in knots just even listening to this show. And I want people to admit that these things happen to black people all over this country, young black men. I am a white 57-year-old rural person, and I believe them. And we should all believe these people. That's the most important thing.
Thanks, Elaine, very much for your call. Let's go to Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I was going to preface this. I've been arrested many times and harassed. It's not just a black thing. In my youth, I was beaten up all the time by police. I've been arrested, but I've never been charged with anything because every time I've ever been arrested was for standing up to the police as they beat up young ladies, beat up young black men, as they completely abuse their authority. And the only person who seemed willing to step up was myself. And so as my verbal argument began, I was arrested and beaten profusely on several occasions by the police for questioning their tactics. Now, I bring this up just because I'm about to head off here shortly to a gun range with a good friend of mine who was let go from the police because he was not violent enough. He was reprimanded too many times for not following his direct order to make an example of college students here in Madison to enact a more violent arrest form than he did when he just decided to talk people down rather than enact violence. And therefore, he was let go from the police department for not following orders, even though the orders were to physically abuse people. I bring this as an example to the Baton Rouge Black Lives Matter rally, where it was a peaceful rally with many unarmed citizens. We, the people, were unarmed. And yet the police, the militant police, showed up with assault vehicles, fully automatic weapons, tasers, gas masks, bulletproof vests, all this stuff that they're trying to tell us that we, the people, shouldn't be allowed to have.
All right. Thanks, Mike. We have tons of phone calls. You do have to ask the question, though. Was that a response to what had happened just previously in Dallas when five officers were shot? I mean, there's an escalation here. Some might be wrong, might be not quite the right response, but you have to look at it from everybody's point of view, right? Mike, thanks very much for your call. Let us go next to Annie in Houstonsford. Hi, Annie.
Hi. Yeah, there's been so many good things, and yeah, we need to treat the police better, as in pay, and require them to be better trained. But one of the things that has come about in our country is the whole thing with how being politically correct is somehow an awful thing. Where basically being politically correct, doesn't that just mean respecting people?
I'm not sure what it means.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems that respecting people for whoever they are is deemed to be politically correct, and therefore it's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole thing of both sides do it, and, you know, all these myths that are perpetuated and the misinformation that people live on just seems to proliferate and mislead people as to what's really going on.
Thanks, Annie, for your call. Nancy in Minocqua, hi.
Hi. I just had a couple of points. My first one is, guns don't kill people. People with guns kill people. It's like now two military people have shot police. So we blame the military then because they both came from the military? It's the sickness in this country of mental health. And it's to say that cops are stupid, that they need bachelor's degrees. Would you work somewhere for $27,000 a year with a bachelor's degree? Probably not. And so, I mean, there's a lot of very smart cops out there. There's a lot of guys with associate's degrees that are doing a fantastic job. And I just think to target them and say, oh, yeah, it's all their fault because of these killings. No, it's a few people, and I don't care where you work. There are a few people in any field that don't do their job the right way. Those are the people that have mental problems. They have social problems. They have behavioral problems. Maybe that's what we should be talking about is mental health.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. One more call. We have about a minute left, a little less. Gary, hi.
Yes, hi. Well, you mentioned about talking about the race issue. It's been talked into the ground for the last 40 years. Nothing's going to change. But with the crime, Black Lives Matter, black people aren't getting the message because when it comes to murder, shootings, armed robbery, they're off the charts compared to whites and Hispanics combined. If you take, let's take just outright murder, you're 8 times more likely to be murdered by a black than whites and Hispanics combined.
Well, I question those statistics, but the other question is, why are you many, many times more likely to be pulled over by the police if you're African American? What about that?
What's that?
You didn't hear me?
No, I didn't.
It may be part of the problem of what we've been talking about. We don't hear each other. Being pulled over by the police, if you're African American, you're many, many more times likely. Every African American I know has been pulled over by the police, and people will say they're highly educated. So there's something discriminatory going on there, isn't there?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But I guess if you wanted to take numbers, if a police officer was going to pull a car over, he'd be much more likely to find somebody breaking the law by pulling over 3 black guys than 3 old white guys.
Okay, thanks for the call. Thanks for all of your calls, everybody. We thought it was time to just, you know, check on in and see what everybody's thinking. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour and for answering the many phone calls that came in. Thanks for those calls. We'll be with you again tomorrow, starting at 1 o'clock, and looking forward to conversation then.